There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're very pleased to welcome into the studio Edward Bell, commodity analyst at Emirates NBD. Good morning to you, Ed.
Good morning.
The commodity you've recently been producing are little sprogs. You've just had a young boy, Nick. 2 weeks old, is he?
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks old.
Many
and going very well. Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. Really pleased to hear that. Good on you. How many does that make it?
That's two for us.
Yeah, and counting. Should we move on to safer ground?
Yeah, let's move on quickly. Yeah.
Oops, maybe the seven is prophetic. Who knows? trade, climate change, Middle East relations. Those were just some of the things that the G7 disagreed on with Donald Trump at the summit over the weekend in Canada. But people weren't really expecting very much anyway. So, you know, they kind of got what they expected. What was your reaction to it?
When we were looking at the outcome of the talks as they were happening, it looked a little less sort of explosive and fewer fireworks than perhaps a lot of the market had been anticipating. This sort of G6 plus one, this very us against them antagonistic approach between the U.S. and its allies over trade disputes. And it looked like there would be some kind of accommodation and agreement. There was an announcement between the EU and the U.S., for instance, that they would set up a formal dialogue on trade that would be reviewed with a regular frequency to try to address some of the disputes between the two parties. But then overnight for us here in Dubai, it looks like that kind of muted reaction was firmly cast away with President Trump sending a couple of tweets and refusing to endorse the statement that the G7 put out. So it does certainly look like the prospects of further escalations in trade action by the United States against its allies and reciprocal ones from Canada, from the European countries, and from other parties such as Mexico who aren't part of the G7, looks very much likely it's going to be back on the cards in the upcoming days.
Well, there are sort of three parts to that trade thing. It's NAFTA, Europe, and the US versus China. Let's start with that NAFTA. I mean, what do you think Canadians and Mexicans are going to be thinking? Well, I guess you'll know what Canadians are thinking after that G7 summit. I mean, there was some talk about bilateral discussions and others direct US-Canada, US-Mexico. But do you have any real reason for optimism?
I think at this point, no. It looks pretty hard to see a way that NAFTA can exist as it does now or even with some kind of tinkering. Both Canada and Mexico were not in favor of those kind of separate bilateral trade agreements. They wanted NAFTA to remain a tripartite agreement, and that those separate deals is very much kind of the U.S. negotiating starting point. And the fact that the U.S. wanted NAFTA to effectively need to be renegotiated every 5 years was not something that Canada or Mexico were interested in either as well. So as it stands now, there's a few, I would say, administrative or logistical hurdles for the NAFTA negotiations to get over, but then this recent escalation of the rhetoric between Canada and the U.S. in particular looks like it's going to make negotiations all the much harder.
Okay, Mexico must be pleased to have the heat taken off them for a short while.
A little bit, yeah.
But Justin Trudeau, he's doing really well in the ratings at home. People are liking the fact that he's standing up to the U.S. as well. Can you remember any time ever when sort of relations have been like this between the U.S. and Canada?
Well, Canadian-U.S. economic relations have had trade disputes over the past, certainly related to primary resources, disputes over the trade of lumber and construction materials between the two goods. But I think what's really crucial to remember, and this is in light of Donald Trump's proposal that they relook at tariffs on automotive, on cars and trucks, is that the supply chains for the productions of companies, say GM, Ford, they are very well integrated between Canada and the United States. So imposing a tariff on a product that goes into the manufacture of a car means ultimately the price is going to be reflected higher in the United States as well. So it is very much a, you know, spite your neighbor to shoot yourself in the foot kind of approach to take these kind of tariffs. So the integration of the North American economies is such that these tariffs are really going to end up with higher prices, less competitive production, and probably a detrimental impact on growth going forward if they are enacted fully.
Let's talk about trade. Europe, the EU this week has been running around this week like a lost and injured puppy to a certain degree, trying to sort of work out a response to the US trade tariffs being slapped on EU goods. So far, they haven't really managed to sort of get any concerted action together. Is this something that can be smoothed over fairly quickly, do you think, the trade with Europe issue?
I think think it could be, again, a case of more escalation. You're right to point out that Europe has not responded with as wide-ranging a level of counter-tariffs on U.S. goods in relation to the tariffs imposed on steel and aluminium imports from the EU countries, but that doesn't mean that those lists won't be expanded going further. The EU tariffs look to be very targeted at states where senators or government officials could try and put some pressure on the House or on the Senate to try and curb Donald Trump's influence over trade policy. But whether that is going to be the case remains very much to be seen going forward. And also, it's to remember that while they might be having a trade dispute with the U.S. at the moment, the EU has its hands full dealing with Brexit negotiations as well.
So we've got two other trade issues, really. One is obviously the U.S. decision on China tariffs expected this week. And then, of course, there's the big Trump-Kim summit in Singapore on Tuesday, the reason that Donald Trump left the G7 early. Do you think the world is going to be a different place after this midweek?
It does certainly look like we have a lot of high-profile events, certainly from a kind of geopolitical and very big-picture macro story, the G7 meeting, the potential for a real ramping up of a trade dispute between China and the U.S. if the United States does decide to impose tariffs on up to $50 billion worth of goods from China. And this somewhat incongruous idea from a couple of months ago that the president of the United States would meet with the leader of North Korea and potentially have a more productive outcome than he did at the assembly of the G7 meeting. So it does look like a very strange that could be happening at the end of this week. And certainly we do have some big economic decisions from both the Fed, which is expected to raise interest rates this week, and also from the ECB, which is not expected to raise rates, but to basically call time on its monetary support for the Eurozone economy. So quite an eventful week going forward.
It does seem strange if at the end of the week that North Korea is the U.S.'s new best friend. Richard.
Enough of all of these history-defining political summits. Let's talk about football, Ed, and in particular the Football World Cup.
He's from Canada. It had to be soccer.
Subtitles are available. It starts on Thursday. Why are the world's oil traders going to be watching the opening game so closely?
Yeah, the first game is Saudi Arabia-Russia. I will defer my expertise on football punditry to others who are better placed, but certainly it comes 1 week ahead of the next OPEC meeting, where any decision on raising production in the second half of the year is going to be closely watched. We've had several comments and meetings, joint meetings between the Saudi and Russian energy minister, where they were kind of nudging the market in that direction, that we would see some kind of production response to the unanticipated declines in output we've seen from Venezuela, and also in anticipation of an expected decline in production from Iran in the second half of the year. So this week's first match of the World Cup is going to be very, very closely monitored to see if both countries maybe want to give the other side the opportunity to get more possession of the ball. But let's see how the outcome of the game goes first.
And you've got Vladimir Putin has invited Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to the game. So they're going to be watching it together, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would say in the last, say, 2 years, you've seen a real remarkable turnaround in relations between Saudi Arabia and Russia, particularly focused around the issue of oil production and energy policy. So talking also about Saudi investments into Russian energy projects. So there is a growing consensus that, yes, you have OPEC, which has been the traditional kind of architect of oil policy in a lot of at least this part of the world, and Russia was kind of separate to run its own course. But we look certainly now like you have the two of the world's biggest producers heading in the same direction, and their relations becoming much stronger than the relations within OPEC countries themselves. Certainly, I think we saw from some of the other Gulf countries that the attitude toward that idea that there could be further oil production in the second half of the year might not gone as down as well as some of the other producers would have liked. They want to maintain production at current levels and keep prices where they are now. I think one thing to note, though, is while the market is kind of talking or seeming to price in some escalation or some increase in production from Russia and Saudi Arabia, if you look at the pricing that both Russia and Saudi Arabia have been getting in the markets lately, that has improved quite significantly. So Saudi Arabia's official prices, which they set out for their customers, long-term customers, say an Asian oil refinery, and also the price that Russian oil gets in the key refining centers in Northwest Europe or in the Mediterranean, both of those have been increasing lately without any prospect of increasing production. So they might just want to hold steady for the time being and try and let the good times roll on a bit longer.
The Turkish rate hike that happened during the week, what do you think that's going to mean for the Turkish economy and lira?
Yeah, this was a surprisingly strong hike in terms of how far the central bank went. They raised rates by 125 basis points at the Thursday last week, and that really helped to arrest some of the depreciation we've seen in the value of the lira. So it's now back below that 4.5 level to the dollar. This does send a bit more of a reassuring signal about the independence and the ability of the central bank in Turkey to try and arrest some of the issues around inflation, around the weakening of the Turkish lira. But certainly, I think the big economic and political story for Turkey are going to be the parliamentary elections coming up in a couple of weeks. And that's going to cast some serious questions about the independence of Turkey's economic institutions going forward.
Ed, a lot to talk about there. Maybe we'll catch up on that one next time around. Ed Bell, commodity analyst, Emirates NBD. We appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.